Blog Talk Radio.
A little bit of issue there with the microphone. Sorry about that. Lean Keys, Real Talk 129. We are here tonight to talk about a couple of different things. Flyweight division, UFC. Flyweight division is back. I mean, it's not that the flyweight division left. They were here, and they were very entertaining, contrary to popular belief. You know, there was once a time when the UFC flyweight division was very, I'd say it was underappreciated for a period of time, and it I think a big reason for that was because you had one of the greatest fighters of all time, Demetrius Johnson, who was just so, he was just so many levels ahead of his entire division that it just painted the picture that the division was boring, because it just made it seem like there really wasn't any competition, and that just kind of put, it kind of just put like a kind of a bad look on the division. It created a narrative for the division that wasn't necessarily a true one, and you know, that time has passed, and now we're at a time where the flyweight title, you know, was contested. You had Henry Cejudo was the champion, and he won the belt and defended the belt versus T.J. Dillashaw. Dillashaw moved down to 125. They kind of had a super fight there. That was the top of the year in 2019. Was a pretty big event, and of course Cejudo knocked out Dillashaw, and you know, then Dillashaw popped for EPO, so you know we haven't heard from him, but you know, until he's back. But regardless, Cejudo kind of more or less sat on the belt for a while, and you know, he ended up moving up to the bantamweight, and he won that belt, which I knew he would do, but it just kind of, you know, the bantamweights aside, it kind of left the flyweights in a place where you just had a champion kind of just sitting on the belt, and a champion who pretty much didn't really have too much interest in the flyweight division, which is kind of backwards from his whole narrative from the start, where he said he was there to save the flyweights. You know, Henry Cejudo said he was going to save the flyweight division. That was his, you know, that was his claim to fame. You know, with winning the flyweight title and beating and to promote the Dillashaw fight, he said he was going to save the flyweights by, you know, not losing to Dillashaw. So, but then when he did that, he pretty much did the opposite, because he hopped divisions and then left the flyweight division high and dry by not sticking around to defend the belt. So that's just my opinion. But if you didn't know, that's just a little we just took a little walk back into what has been going on with the flyweights, and then up until that this point, where, you know, now they, I'm pretty sure they stripped Cejudo of the belt after a period of time when they knew he wasn't going to fight, and I think that was like a month or two ago, maybe 3 months ago, they stripped him of the belt, maybe even earlier than that. I don't really remember, but anywho, you had now you have the vacant flyweight title, and they set up a title fight, which is actually set for this weekend. You have Davison Figueiredo is fighting somebody who, if you had been watching the flyweights, you know, in the past, you know, 5 or so years, you're used to seeing this guy in title fights. I mean, but even though he's only actually been in two, he's only been in two of them. But, you know, Joseph Benavidez, if they're going to fight Davison Figueiredo. And, you know, there's a big thing. There's a big thing going on with that now, because really only Benavidez is fighting for the belt now because of what just happened. And we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. But Lee is here, and I just wanted to – what's up, bro?
Man, I'm so disappointed in Figueiredo, man. This is probably the biggest fight of his career. and he pulls a Yoel Romero and don't make weight. But but I'm happy for Joseph Benavidez, man, because I think he's well deserving of a title fight. You know, because he couldn't beat DJ, so there was no way he was ever going to get a third fight with DJ as long as DJ was the champ. And then Cejudo, I think Joseph Benavidez beat Cejudo, and I think that's why Cejudo didn't want to fight him. But I kind of agree with you. Cejudo backtracked on everything he said about the flyweight division, because ever since he fought TJ Dillashaw at 125, he has not even mentioned fighting at 125 or, you know, defending the belt at 125. And he's basically been a total fraud to me, especially once he won the bantamweight belt. So hopefully Joseph Benavidez can get the job done and he can wear the belt that you know, that I think he probably, I ain't going to say he deserves, but he deserves to be in another title fight. So, and Figueiredo, man, come on, bro. You can't miss weight for a title fight. This is the biggest fight of your career, and you miss weight by 2.5 pounds. Not 1 pound, 2.5 pounds. So, but at the same time, he's still 17-1. Benavidez 28-5, with two of those 5 losses coming to probably the greatest flyweight and one of the greatest mixed martial artists in the world today, DJ. So both of them got outstanding records. And this is actually being fought close to my hometown. Actually, about once you go through the tunnel, probably about a 3-minute drive from where my mama live at once you get through the tunnel. So, yeah, man, outside of this fight, though, this card is really, really lame.
Damn.
I mean, I'm looking at it, man. I'm just looking at the names. I mean, we got Felicia Spencer fighting. She fighting a girl I never heard of. You got Megan Anderson fighting a girl I never heard of. You got Ian Cantalava. I heard of him. I don't know. I heard of the guy he's fighting too, Uncle Lev. But outside of that, I mean, I know Marcin Tybura, I know Luis Pena, but some of these other fights, I don't know none of these guys. So normally when you have a card like this, you have very low expectations. Normally these fights turn out to be bangers because your expectations are so low because you don't know anybody. But it might be some bangers up here. It might be some new names coming out this card that we might be talking about down the road.
Yeah, that's usually what happens. Is the sleeper cards that people look at and they kind of say, like, okay, what is this card, are the ones that end up being unbelievable. And if I'm not mistaken, that actually just happened with the Corey Anderson and Jan Błachowicz card, because a lot of people – And correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of people looked at that card a couple months ago and said, this is like such a bad card, and what is that main event? Who cares about that, you know, fight? And that's how I saw a lot of people say. And like I said, correct me if I'm wrong, but that was a banger of a card.
Yeah, they had a lot of finishes in that card.
I really enjoyed watching that card. And I was excited during it. I was like locked in during it. It was very, very good card. And that is pretty much what I feel like is going on with this one as well. And that's not to say that it's definitely going to be a banger. I'm just saying that to your point, that's what this card is to me. It's the same look. It's one where you would say this, I don't need to watch this card. But then you're going to miss out on a lot of highlight reels when you don't watch it.
Yeah. I just – actually, you know what? Actually, I've been a hypocrite, man. And I'm gonna explain why. Because remember I used to say that the fight night cards should be the cards that highlight your guys, that's your guys and girls ranked 10 through 15.
Yeah.
And basically, when you look at this card, this is actually what you're getting. You're basically getting a couple of big names, but then you're getting some guys that's probably ranked in the top 15 in their division, fighting against each other. But it's just that I don't really know none of these names. I think that's the part that's getting me. Maybe I need to dig a little deeper. But, you know, I know Luis Pena. I know Marcin Tybura.
Oh,
I know
Megan
the guy he's fighting.
On the card too.
I know Megan Anderson. Brendan Allen, I heard of him.
Ion Cutaleva is a savage too. I watched his last fight and
I think his fight should be the co-main event.
Yeah, I don't think. I don't know. They really have been pushing Felicia Spencer though. I don't really know the girl.
She the one that fought Cyborg, right? That actually had a good showing against Cyborg.
Yeah, so that might be why that they did that, because people probably remembered her from having that performance.
Oh, but she also submitted Megan Anderson in the fight before Cyborg, though.
Are you sure about that? Is that in the UFC?
Yeah, I'm actually looking at it right now. Megan Anderson, she lost to Felicia Spencer. Submission in round one.
Oh, I don't even remember that.
I don't remember it either. But it was on the Dos Anjos. But it was on the UFC Fight Night with Dos Anjos and Kevin Lee. So that was a long time ago.
My man said,
I'm serious. I don't remember it.
That's hilarious.
Because I thought Felicia Anderson. I mean, I thought Felicia Spencer, her fight in the UFC, her first fight was against Cyborg. I thought she came straight from Invicta to UFC to fight Cyborg, but
yeah,
I guess we missed this one.
Yeah, we must have been, I don't know what we thought. We must have said the car was a snooze or something. We didn't watch it because I don't even recall that ever happened. So I thought the same thing. I thought Spencer just came out and fought Cyborg right away.
Actually, they actually have the highlights of her fight against Megan Anderson, and she really dominated Megan Anderson from the highlights that I can see. She actually took her back after giving her a lot of little punches to the face, and she choked out. Okay.
I'm actually surprised too that Luis Pena is. So low on the prelims card. I would have thought. I feel like he's Luis Pena. I'm surprised they don't push him more. Luis Pena is really good. I don't know why. I would think he'd be main event of the prelims.
They can't trust him, man. They can't trust him making weight. And I think this is punishment for him not making weight in his last fight.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, because one thing too is that I don't understand because he's such a big guy. But he's fighting in these smaller level divisions. I don't understand how he's even making weight for the fights that he did make weight for. Because he's like a really big guy. So I don't even know how he's even managing that. How big is he? I would like to know how big is he, walk around weight.
Yeah, because what, he fighting at 155?
Yeah, he's fighting at 155 now, but he was fighting at 145 before.
Yeah, because he's 6'3". So I'm thinking 6'3", he was going down to 145. So basically, maybe 190, maybe 195, you know.
Damn.
Maybe.
Yeah, I was thinking 200 myself. I was thinking he could be a flat 200. I mean, cause he's a big dude. I mean, damn. I don't know. I'm going to do some digging into that.
Because I'm looking at the tail of the tape, and they have Pena at 155, and they got Garcia at 135. So is Garcia moving up two weight classes for this fight?
Okay. Yeah, because I can't imagine that Lewis Payne is moving down to bantamweight to fight this guy. I wouldn't think that it must be this Garcia must be moving up a weight class.
Okay, Garcia, he fought, they got him at 6 feet, 135. That's wow.
That's an interesting fight then, because you're saying Garcia is he's 6 feet tall?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, this is an interesting fight then. You guys, I see what the UFC tried to do here. They try to put Lewis Pena versus a guy who he's not gonna have like a big height advantage over.
Yeah, because I think in Pena's last fight, he was definitely dwarfing the guy that he was fighting. I think he was at least 4 inches taller than the guy he was fighting. Because actually, he's 3 inches taller than Garcia, though.
Yeah, he's still got a couple inches on him. I was just thinking, probably the matchmakers probably looked at it and said, okay, we can at least get a guy who's 6 feet and over. And not have him fight a guy who he's got 6 inches on, and he could probably throw a front kick. He could probably throw a front kick and knock them out.
Yeah. He fought at lightweight his last fight against Matt Wyman. You know, he won by KO, so. No, that was on June 22nd. He fought on the Joanna card that he lost on to some dude named Frevolo. He actually lost his last fight by split decision, and he was fighting at lightweight. So, yeah, this Steven Garcia, man, I'm kind of shocked that he's moving up two divisions. Wow.
Yeah, I think if you're saying Lewis Pena lost his last fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I remember that one. I didn't see it, but I remember actually. It's funny. I remember seeing Lewis Pena tweet about it after the decision, and I'm pretty sure there was some controversy there. I think he felt like he was robbed, and he tweeted something, and it was like, I don't know how the judges could say. He's like, I don't know how the judges could say I lost the fight when I left the arena with another man's blood all over me.
Well, I think when I watched that fight, DC felt the same way. But DC felt that Pena didn't come out and dominate the third round the way he should have, being that it was a close fight. And I think, if I recall correctly, that's why he lost the fight, because he wasn't aggressive in the third round.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing lately with the judging too, is because there's a lot of fights lately where you know, the fans and the commentators and, you know, people like us, you know, making hot takes, you know, on our show. Everybody have so many different opinions over the judges' scorecards, and a lot of fights it comes down to one big round for either guy, or one round, which kind of seems like a big round for that, you know, it kind of seems like a dominant round, but what did they really do to dominate the round, you know, because some people, you know, score the round like for example when this is not the same exact case, but when Derrick Lewis just fought Ilia Laffite, it was, I had a big debate with one of my close friends about who won the fight, because he was, and in his argument, what he was saying was that it was like the one round out of the fight where Latifi really, he maintained top position, like his control time while in top position was like the majority of one of the rounds, because like it was kind of choppy, like he wasn't always in top position, like he would get Lewis down, you get Derrick Lewis down, but Derrick Lewis would get back up. We know how he kind of just gets up whenever he feels like it. So there was a lot of that, but there was one particular round, I want to say maybe the second round, where Latifi really had like most of the round he was just in top position on top of Derrick Lewis, and that was really the majority of the round. But what I was debating with my friend about was, because he was saying how did Latifi not win a round like that, and then I think what I said was, how come he didn't score a lot of points with the judges when he had a round like that? And I'm saying, well, if he had, you know, 9 minutes of control time over the course of the three rounds, but then if you really think about it, 5 minutes out of that 9 minutes of control time was him in top position not doing anything. So you didn't see him landing any ground strikes. He wasn't really advancing his position. He wasn't making submission attempts. He wasn't really doing anything. So, that's what I'm just trying to say, is that there's a lot of rounds that, like you were saying, when you said how, you know, DC felt like he didn't really come out and dominate the third round the way he should have, and that was why and him not dominating that third round, even if he looked good, it didn't sway him in the fight.
Yeah, because I think the Latifi fight, I think one thing about his fight that, yeah, he did take Derrick Lewis down, but he was never, ever, like, going for a submission. He wasn't hitting him with no ground and pound. It was like he took him down, but that was just it. He was just happy with the takedown, and that's why I think the judges that judged that fight, I think they did the right job, because a takedown should only be scored as a positive for the person that's taking them down, as if they're trying to advance their position, they got some ground and pound, or they're going for submissions. Just because you take somebody down, if you don't do nothing with it, what's the purpose of the takedown, really?
Well, that's the thing, too. Me and you always seem to agree on that, is you know, there's certain guys who they want to wrestle, but they really don't, and they want to move around, but they don't really, you can't really get a sense of what they're trying to do with the wrestling, or when they're in a dominant position, or you know, there's open opportunities for guys to you know, get something done, and it seems like they don't really jump on it. They kind of just want to smother somebody, and that word really, really makes sense, you know, in those kind of scenarios. It's smothering. That's not really something that I've ever really felt like was, it was never impressive to me, you know, the smothering. That to me has never really gone too far.
Because I'm going to tell you the perfect example of what we're talking about. For those people that listen to the show, when Khabib takes somebody down, he don't take them down just to lay on them. Khabib is taking them down to make them carry his weight. He always trying to advance his position. He's always throwing punches to the body, to the leg, head shots. He's always doing something in that position to make his opponent think. Now, when a guy takes you down, a guy or girl takes you down, and they're just laying there and they're throwing like little half-ass hammer fists, or, you know, they're just basically banking on the takedown being a point in their favor, I think that has to come up off the UFC scoring. I just don't like that. I feel that, let me see, in the Dan Hooker and Paul Felder fight, I feel that Paul Felder won that fight. Paul Felder, I felt he lost round one because he wasn't checking the leg kicks and he was letting the hooker get off. I felt Felder won his rounds 2, 3, and 5. And if you look at rounds 5, the reason I think the judges gave it to Hooker is because of that BS takedown he got at the end of the fight, which really wasn't nothing because basically he just took him down just to score a point. And to me, that shouldn't have been enough for him to win round 5.
So you think Paul Felder was robbed in that fight?
Yes. Although I did score the fight for Hooker because I knew that the judges was going to get him round 3 because of the takedown. But when the stats came up, and I actually posted the stats on Twitter, actually Felder landed more significant shots. More significant shots. He actually had octagon control pretty much the whole fight. His takedown defense was somewhat suspect, but he landed more significant shots.
No, I'm gonna actually go right now, and I just want to go back and just see what the stats were for the fight. I feel like it's a great time to just go ahead and see.
I'm trying to see.
I got it right here. Okay, so, well, they had a 5-round fight. I actually missed this fight, and I'm really mad because I really wanted to see it. These guys are 2 straight beasts. So, So, Hooker landed. Okay, this is so strange. It has Hooker, Dan Hooker's name on the left, but Paul Felder's actual body is on the left. And then Hooker is on the right, but his name is on the left. So, that's really confusing. So, I don't know whose stats are who's here, but. Felder landed 119 strikes, and 110 of those were significant strikes. And Hooker landed 133 strikes, and 122 of those were significant strikes. Wow, so these guys were really accurate in this fight. That is a very accurate, wow. That's crazy. So, Jesus, these guys. So really, wow. This was a banger of a fight just reading by that accuracy right there. It's very crazy. And then the only thing that's really there is, I guess, Felder attempted one takedown. He failed the takedown. And then Hooker landed one takedown, but I think that's the one you're talking about that you said was kind of like a bogus takedown.
Yeah.
And Felder had one ground pass. So, okay. Yeah.
But the thing is, when you're watching the fight, you could tell that it was a close fight. Because anybody that has half a brain and know anything about MMA, you can tell a close fight when you can see it. You can tell a complete domination when you see it. This fight was actually close. I just scored the 5th round for Hooker only because of that takedown. I want to say he got in the last minute of the fight, and just knowing how UFC judges score fights, I knew they would give it to him. So, but me, the stats, actually I sent you a picture of it. The stats, as soon as the fight was over, I just felt that I was like, wow, I knew Felder was doing work, but I didn't know that he had outstruck him. He actually, on the picture I sent you, he won 3 out of the 4 stats.
Oh, Wow, UFC.com, really, okay. They really have, like, super detailed, like, what the striking, like, you know, they're showing, like, strikes at distance per round and things like that. I didn't realize that they really got into the breakdown that much, how many strikes were in the clinch, and, wow, I didn't realize they went that deep into it. Neither guy had any ground strikes. I'm not surprised. I figured these are two stand-up guys. I'm not surprised. I'm kind of mad I missed this fight, honestly. I'm pretty mad. You know, also, something I've seen earlier today that relating to this is Dan Hooker had been, I guess Dan Hooker came out and said that his next fight is either Justin Gaethje or Dustin Poirier. And he said, if you know, he wants to fight Gaethje, but if Gaethje's not available, then Dustin Poirier is the guy. And Dustin Poirier actually tweeted in response to him and said, he said, like, I got 5 rounds for you, or something like that. He told the guy, I got 5 rounds for you. So, hey, I'm all in on that one. Y'all don't got to convince me. Y'all don't got to convince me nothing about that. Y'all can just stand and bang, and we can just see it for 5 rounds, and it's fine. I have no problem with that. I have no objections to it. I will just oblige, and I will just be a very supportive fan to watch that fight and watch that event, because that is a true banger of a fight. Oh my goodness.
Actually, Hooker called out, I want to say he called out Poirier after his fight against Felder. He called out Poirier. And I was kind of shocked that Poirier actually was all in on his fight. I think he just got tired of Hooker talking trash. And I think he just like, yo, let me get back out there and you know, show this young guy something. But, you know, I just hope Dustin comes out and shows us some improvements to his game, because he definitely got exposed against Khabib, but a lot of strikers get exposed against Khabib because of his world-class grappling. But I want Poirier to show us that he can do something outside of this fight on his feet. Because me and you talked about this one time before, and it was right before he fought Khabib, that when he fought Alvarez, he couldn't get off his back. He couldn't get off his back against Alvarez. And other things saved him. Am I talking about the right fight that Alvarez had the illegal elbow and
set
him up or something like that? Yeah. So, I just think Dustin, that's a flaw in his game that he needs to work on. Hooker, we haven't seen him taken down, so I don't know whether or not he can fight off his back, but we know he can stand up and fight. So let's see which one of these guys come with a new wrinkle in their game and go for a takedown or, you know, shoot early, make their opponent think about something different, because all we're going to see from both of these guys basically is stand-up game.
Yeah, and I think that's just one thing that the lightweights have that's kind of a problem, is that, like, these guys like Paul Felder, like, and Dan Hooker, like, Poirier, like, you really don't see, like, any submissions from these guys or, like, anything, any type of ground game. It's mostly just that they're great strikers, but it's, you know, I don't know how these guys, you know, would win the belt. I mean, it's fun just because I would say all of them are much better strikers than Khabib. But, you know, in terms of in terms of everything else, I don't think they'd be able to compete. Because if they get taken down, they're just going to, you know, it's just going to be goodnight, Irene. So,
but and that's what I think, though. I think that when you add something else to your game, it makes you that much more of a dangerous fighter. And because basically your opponent, normally they're going to look at tapes of your last fight, last two or three fights. And anybody look at Dustin's fights against Alvarez and Khabib, they would know that he can't get off his back when you take him down. Even his scramble game isn't that good when he gets taken down. But, you know, normally when somebody gets taken down, you know, they'll scramble to get their back to the fence so they can use the fence to get up. He don't even do that. So, hopefully he has added some stuff to his game. Hopefully Hooker will come with some new stuff to his game. But I think Hooker, he's happy with throwing leg kicks and being a counterpuncher. I think that's Hooker's MO. But I don't think you want to be a counterpuncher against somebody with the hands that Dustin has. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, I'm thinking I really like Gaethje versus I still want to see Gaethje versus Conor. Gaethje McGregor, I've been wanting to see for a long time, so I'm not going to put Gaethje versus anybody else until we just can see that one. So I'm still going to want to see that one, and then put Hooker versus Poirier. Those two right there is two absolute bangers, and I have no other matches that I could be made with those four guys. Just those four, those two right there. That's
just it. It was actually on a chat on Twitter this week that the UFC is targeting Gaethje versus Conor this summer in Vegas. But Gaethje came. Somebody asked Gaethje, "Would he be willing to fight Conor in Dublin?" And he was like, "Hell, I wouldn't mind being the villain." So I don't know. We'll see how it go. But there's been a lot of chatter here that the UFC trying to make Conor versus Gaethje.
Well, I mean, UFC Dublin. I mean, that would be huge. That's all the way until August. I mean, that would be big. When I first saw it, like, I wouldn't have thought to have McGregor headline the Dublin card, because I thought they'd want to have, like, some of the up-and-coming guys from Ireland to headline the Dublin card. And probably McGregor would want to be on, like, one of the marquee cards. But regardless of that, is just the fact that it's all the way until August. Like, Dublin, UFC Dublin, I'm pretty sure, is in August. Like, we got to wait all that time. Like, come on, man. Like, when's the last time we saw Gaethje fight? Like, I don't even remember the last time he fought. When's
Cowboy.
The last time? Man, that was like 6 months ago. That was literally like six months ago.
Yeah, and Cowboy has fought since then.
Yeah, and he's about to fight again. Like, that's one thing.
Cowboy has a fight?
I think he has a fight because he posted on his Instagram a picture of him and his son on the beach. And him and his son's like, you know, he's sitting on the sand. His son, he's watching his son, you know, play on the beach. And he, on the caption, it said something along the lines. He was like, "What do you think, son? Like, should we fight in March or April?"
Okay, I mean, that's news to me. But I'm with you. I mean,
that's why I love Cowboy, man, because as many times as people say, like, many jokes that people make about Cowboy or whatever, you can't knock him. He's always game to fight. He's not afraid you can knock him down and he gets back up, and then he'll go finish somebody in his next fight. Like, he never quits. Like, that guy. And I don't think that Cowboy is punch drunk. I don't think he's punch drunk. I think the thing is that he's just fighting guys that are just so dangerous with their hands, and he's getting caught by those guys. I don't think he's punch drunk, though. I still think he kicked that kid's ass that he fought that other time. The Hernandez kid who's in the top 15, if they fought again, he'll destroy him again. I believe that. And I think Cowboy would destroy a lot of these guys, a lot of these lightweight fighters. He would destroy a lot of them. I don't think he's punch drunk. He's just getting caught by the most dangerous hands in the division. So he got knocked out by Gaethje. Ferguson didn't even knock him out. So I don't even like that. That's not a knockout. It was a doctor stoppage. It was not a knockout. Cowboy blew his nose and his eye puffed up, so the doctor stopped the fight. I don't think that is not getting knocked out. It was just a stoppage. But I think the fight would have probably went to a decision. Or maybe Ferguson would have finished him in the third round, but I don't know. Because other than that, I don't really think that Cowboy was that hurt. But, yeah, he got caught by Gaethje and Conor, but those are the most dangerous hands in the lightweight division. So I don't really – to me, that don't really say that much. You lose to the best guys. I still think he'll kick a lot of these lightweights' ass. And that kid that he fought before, he would destroy him again. And he dominated Ally Quinta, and Ally Quinta is in the top 10. He destroyed Ally Quinta. So I don't think Cowboy's out the gate yet. Some people have wrote Cowboy off. I don't think he's out the gate yet, though, in my opinion.
Just to add to that, you know, man, my thing with Cowboy is, and you know, you done heard me say this a thousand, I ain't gonna say a thousand times, you done heard me say this many a times. When he get into this mode where he fights a lot, I don't like it. Because he starts off fighting at a high level. And then the levels of his fight and his and the way he looks starts to go down. And I just think he needs to take time off, man. You know, I know the Conor fight didn't last that long, but then right before that, he lost to Gaethje. So I like when Cowboy allows his body to rest and him to get refocused mentally. Then he comes out and put on good performances. I don't know about this quick turnaround, but one thing about him is he does get in the octagon. He's willing to take fights on short notice. And I think, you know, Maybe he's closer to the end than we all think, and he's just trying to stack his chips so he can go ahead and exit stage right. So if that's the case, I wouldn't be surprised if we hear about him retiring sometime next year.
And you know what too is that I'm disappointed in Conor, man. I'm really disappointed. And you know I'm a big fan, but I'm very disappointed because he fought Cowboy, I think it was 40 seconds flat. And I'm not even trying to, like, bring that up to say that it was, like, super impressive. It was impressive, but that's not the point of why I'm saying that length of time. I'm just pointing out that it was 40 seconds to just flip it and say that you only fought for 40 seconds. And he walked away unscathed. I don't even think he absorbed a single strike. How do we have to wait months? Like, in my opinion, he should have been turning right around and fighting again. Like, if you have a fight like that, you barely even fought. Like, we saw you fight for less than 1 minute. He didn't even absorb a strike. Where's the other fight? There should be another fight. At least there should be another fight. Like, I don't understand it. Like, where was the contract? Where is the contract? The contract should have been sent the next day for the next fight. McGregor's next fight should have been written up the next day. I don't understand. Where is the fight? Where's the Gaethje fight? Where's the Nate Diaz trilogy? Where's the whoever the hell else that is there with the Poirier rematch? I don't even know who's there, but where is anything? I need something. I don't want to wait until August. I need 7 months.
But that's what happens, man, with the Conor fans, man, is he tells y'all one thing and does something totally different. He said he was going to fight 4 times this year. So he fought early this year, so his next fight should be either coming up in March or April. And then he could have fought around July, August time frame. And then he could have fought at the end of the year. I never believed he was going to fight 4 times this year, man. I always thought it would be 2-3 at the max. Because that's just what he does. And then now with the UFC basically allowing him to pick his opponent, he can take his time. Because he knows who he wants to fight and who he doesn't want to fight. So I think it's kind of BS that he gets that type of treatment, but I understand it. But at the same time, I'm kind of with you. But I kind of saw right through it, though. I knew he wasn't going to fight 4 times this year. There's nobody that got a sound mind to think that he was going to fight 4 times this year. So I think he fights maybe in July, maybe International Fight Week. And then he might fight at the end of the year show. I don't see, if he doesn't fight in July, then he fights on the Dublin card, and then he fights at the end of the year. So if we get that. And Khabib has already said that he doesn't see him fighting Conor in the rematch. So I think that boat has sailed. So basically, the only fights we probably can get is probably this Gaethje fight, which is being advertised. I know a lot of people don't want to see the trilogy fight with Nate, but would I mind seeing Conor versus Tony Ferguson? I would buy in for that fight. I think that fight would be a banger. I like that fight. So I just never thought he was going to fight 4 times, man. I just didn't believe it.
Well, I think that one is very much doable, the Ferguson fight, because if I'm McGregor's camp, I'm probably planning for that, because if Ferguson, there is a very, very high possibility that Ferguson beats Khabib on April 18th or whatever day that's on. I'm not saying that, I'm not making my pick and saying Ferguson's going to win, but there is a very high chance that he does win. But there's also a very high chance that Khabib wins. There's a high chance for both of them. That right there is a fight that I don't really think sways more to either guy. I mean, if you really sway, you probably sway, give the edge to Khabib, because just his pressure is just so much, and his volume is so much, because he just, like you were saying before, he just hits you. You know, he just lands so many shots to the body and just terrorizes you once he gets on top of you. So if you give the edge, it'd be to Khabib, but I don't think it's a huge edge. I don't think it's like a fight where it's a sure bet for Khabib. But I do think that there's a high chance that Ferguson wins, and there's a high chance Khabib wins. But if I'm McGregor's camp, I'm planning for that. And I'm probably saying to myself, well, how are we gonna get you ready to fight Ferguson in case he wins the belt, calls you out after that fight? Because I think that could very well happen.
But me and you both know how this is going to play out. If Ferguson wins the belt for Khabib, the UFC is going to give Khabib an immediate rematch because they feel like he's done. They're going to feel like he deserves it. Although, when we look at his record and we take a deeper dive into who he has fought, I don't think an immediate rematch should be granted because he really hasn't fought. I mean, his record is 28-0, but I can't count some of these fights, man. Some of these fights I can't count. Even though he was in the UFC, I just can't count them. I mean, okay, he beat RDA. He beat Michael Johnson, Anson Barboza, Al Kenta, which shouldn't have been a title fight, being that Kenta wasn't even ranked in the top five. Then he beat Conor and he beat Dustin. So those are the fights I would say, all right, Gleison Tibau, he was an old man. Kamaru Usman, he was on his way out the door. Abel Trujillo, I don't even think he's in the UFC anymore. Pat Healy, I don't think he's in the UFC anymore. I don't even know this Darrell Horcher. So out of his 28 wins, I'm going to count the names. Poirier, McGregor, Arkenta, Boza, Johnson, and RDA. And if you
Boza.
want to be generous, I'll give you Gleison Tibau. So out of his 28 wins, I see seven names. Does those seven names actually warrant an immediate rematch? And the guy he beat for the belt wasn't even in the top five. So, but if Tony beats him, I think Dana will actually snuff Khabib and make the Conor fight. Because he's always looking to make as much money on Conor as he possibly can. And I think he will snub Khabib and make the Conor fight. And his thoughts behind that would be Conor beats Tony, and then we have Khabib versus Conor for the belt again. So you still get the second fight, but this time you have Conor in a position of strength over Khabib. So most people that watch UFC or watch mixed martial arts, I would say Khabib would still be in a position of power because he did beat Conor before. So we'll see how it go, man. But I think that's the way that they will go. I think if Tony wins, they'll automatically throw Conor in with Tony, hoping that Conor beats Tony. And then they could get their Khabib versus Conor 2 fight.
Yeah, but Khabib, I'm just gonna let that. I'm just gonna let that one just happen.
Yeah.
Khabib was talking about somebody winning 10 fights, so I guess if you beat Ferguson, then that might just be the equivalent to 10 fights. So then there, and maybe you'll see that happen down the line. But in any case, I'm just disappointed. I'm just disappointed because McGregor only fought for 40 seconds, and I don't have faith that he has a fight in the works. Now, they're saying they're trying to get the Gaethje fight, but I don't believe it until I see, like, a credible source that I deem like a source, like one of my sources, like somebody who, not like these, you know, I don't know, these propaganda, these, like a credible source will come out and say that that fight is in the works, then I will be happy. But even then, though, I wish it was going to be sooner. Like, why couldn't they even try to do it for May? Why is it going to be August? That is such a far distance. And that's what just kills me.
That's because your boy Conor is calling all the shots, man. He's the one that's driving the car right now. The UFC is not driving the car when it comes to Conor fights anymore, man. They have given him way too much power, too much clout, that he called the shots when he want to fight. And to me, that's bad for business because I'm with you. His walkout took longer than his fight. So they couldn't get him back in the octagon second, third quarter. You know, they couldn't get him back in the octagon. What he fought in, what, January? They couldn't get him back in the octagon by June, May. So that's why when he came up with the year of Conor, I didn't buy it because I knew he wasn't going to fight four times in a year. I just knew it. I think Conor is angling for a boxing fight at the end of the year more than a UFC fight because that boxing money is so much better than the UFC money. So I could see him angling for a boxing match, but, you know, I'm going to hold him to his word, though. I'm going to hold him to his word that, you know, that this is the year of Conor back in the UFC. I don't think you get four fights. I think you be lucky to get two, and thank your lucky stars if you get three.
So, this is something too. Speaking of you, it's interesting that you said about him angling for a boxing fight. This is something that I got to ask you about. What happened? Deontay Wilder versus Tyson Fury, the rematch. I didn't watch the fight because I was at the casino and I was doing my thing at the casino and I didn't watch the fight. But while the fight was going on, I was looking at my phone and I was getting some updates, and from what I heard, Wilder got his ass handed to him in that fight.
The funny part about boxing, actually the funny part about anything that's combat sports related, is you always have a guy or a girl always say that they're going to do this, they're going to do that when they get in the ring, blah, 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 blah. And normally it never pans out. But Tyson Fury actually did everything he said he was going to do. He came in at 273. He said he was going to march forward and pressure Deontay Wilder, which he did. He said he was going to use his weight to his advantage, which he did. He used it in the clinch by holding on to Deontay. He used his weight by bending him over and leaning on his back during the breaks. And Fury, like I said, leading up to the fight, Fury is just a better boxer than Deontay. Wilder has a lot of stuff to work on in his game. His head movement was I don't even think he knows how to move his head because Fury was just lighting him up. And Fury has great head movement. Fury was lighting him up. He barely moved his head. His corner was super suspect, not giving him great advice or giving him a solid game plan of what to do. His whole game plan going into that fight was, I'm going to knock him out. Fury's game plan going into the fight was, I'm going to use my weight to my advantage. I'm going to outbox him. I'm going to lean on him, make him carry my weight. And Fury came out and executed his game plan. I thought, you know, his corner threw the towel in the seventh round. I thought he probably shouldn't have came out for the seventh round. I think his corner should have stopped the fight in the sixth. And then for him to come out with his lame excuse about his legs were shot due to the costume that he wore to the ring, me personally, I would have had more respect for him just saying that he lost, you know, that Fury was a better man, like he said, at the end of the fight. And for him to come out with that shit about the cost, the costume he wore to the ring. It gave me cause to pause. But Fury is just a better fighter than him, man. He's a better boxer. And until Deontay becomes a boxer and not a one punch fighter, he will never beat Fury. They could fight 10 more times, and I would pick Fury probably 9 out of them 10 times. So it was a complete domination. Fury looked good, and I know Wilder has, you know, activated his rematch clause, but I think he's going to end up backing out the fight, and I think Fury goes on to fight AJ Joshua, and they're going to try to unite the belts that way, and I think Deontay should sit back. I think he should hope that AJ unifies the belt, so that he possibly can get a shot at, you know, being the unified heavyweight champion if he can get past AJ. But when I look at the heavyweight boxers, I think Fury is the best, man. Fury he's light on his feet. He has all-around punching, and he implements a game plan, and he does it. Wilder needs to become a boxer, and I'll leave it at that.
And I just want to ask you this. Now, what about Andy Ruiz? Where do you think Andy Ruiz fits into the whole sphere?
I think Andy Ruiz, what he needs to do, because he needs to fight the guy Deontay Wilder beat in his last fight. I want to say his name was Ruiz. I think he needs to fight that guy.
Oh,
but
I think after his
showing against AJ Joshua and him being out of shape and all that good stuff, first of all, we need to know that he's serious about boxing, because there's no way that he beat AJ and came back and looked the way he looked in the second fight. He should have been hungrier in the second fight just to show the world that it wasn't a fluke. But hell, it looked like he ate the world going into the second fight. So, man, I don't know where he stands at in the pecking order. But I would probably have him fight the guy Deontay Wilder just beat and have them two probably not being a title eliminator, but probably see where they stack up against the winner of Joshua versus Fury.
Like, he ate the world.
Yeah, man.
I love getting your boxing breakdowns. I had to just ask so I could just learn something new right there. That was really great. Thank you.
But
we might have to make that a new segment. That should be like its own segment of our show. It's just for me to ask you these boxing questions, because there is a lot in the world of boxing.
But the thing that everybody needs to take from this Fury versus Wilder fight is that cross-promotional fights can be made, and both promotions can make money. You can't keep using the cross-promotion thing as a reason for not making big fights. Get together, lock the door, make the fight happen. You know, they had mixed broadcasting teams for the fight. Both ESPN and Fox both did their things as far as marketing the fight. So mixed cross-promotional fights can work and should work and should happen. So I don't want to hear that as an excuse from the guys not fighting each other in the future.
And there you have it. We don't want to hear no excuses. We pretty much hit on everything. You know, so many good things. This was an excellent show. It seems like the Friday night shows are always pretty great. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about the Friday nights, man, but the Friday night shows just be hitting different. They just hit different. I don't understand what's in the air on the Friday nights, but it just gets, oh, man, they're just quality, man. They're just different. They're just, you know, I just enjoy them so much. I just enjoy them so much. So, and I hope that crosses over to the listeners. I hope the listeners enjoy them that much because the energy is just there. It's just a great Friday. And yeah, so happy Friday to everybody. And I know my last words are going to be. My last words are going to be. Everybody, if you're listening to this show, go stream my album on any platform that you listen to music on. It will be there. Keys, just so you know. Keys, just so
yes,
you know.
Sir.
On Spotify, on Apple Music, on iTunes, on Pandora, on YouTube, on whatever you're listening on Amazon Music. Yeah, anything you listen, go search me up, Keys, just so you know. Check out my album. Show some love. I bet you'll love it. And that's what I'm going to leave off with. I appreciate everybody who listens.
Yeah, man. Actually, tomorrow, I think I'm going to do my little training for the scrap tomorrow that we're supposed to do. So I'll probably do that, and I'll probably have you on Pandora while I'm doing that training, man. But congratulations on the album. You know, a long time coming. And, you know, I wish you much success. Hopefully it reaches the masses and everybody give you positive feedback on it. You know, with that being said, shout out to my man Keys finally dropping his album. Shout out to Lee and Keys Real Talk. Still in here doing our thing in 2020. You know, shout out to the Friday Night Show, man. The Friday Night Show, I don't know, it seems like we come up with a different attitude on the Fridays. But with that being said, everybody have a good weekend. Be safe. Don't drink and drive. Look out for each other. And everybody take care. Till next time, Lee and Key signing out. Peace.